divorce rates would go down, child abuse rates would go down, right? Reports of bullying in schools would go down. What else? Just imagine again, if Jesus were king, forgiveness would be the rule of the day. Nobody would hold grudges. You'd probably still go to school if you're a student. You'd probably still have a job if you're a worker. Doesn't mean we just sit around and la-di-da all day. And you may not always get A's just because Jesus is king. Right? But something becomes different when we live in a place where Jesus is king and we are really his citizens. Families become stronger. Marriages become incredibly strong. Children honor their parents. Parents don't exasperate their kids. Employers treat their employees with respect and dignity. Employees do what they're supposed to do and they work hard. Homeless population goes down. Divorce rates goes down. I mean, I look at the paper sometimes and I look at the different things in the first couple pages of the paper and all different reports. And you think, what statistics should change if the kingdom of God, if Jesus were actually king in Bloomington and we were all responsible to the king? Isn't that the kind of world we all dream of? Wouldn't that be the kind of place we'd want to live? Now, I say that because one of the things, when we're talking about the next few weeks, I'm going to call this, Thy Kingdom Come. I've been talking from the Gospel of Luke, looking at the life of Jesus and his teaching. And in the last number of months, we've talked about being alive, awake, and free. And what does it mean for us to be those kind of people? But let's expand it a little bit because Jesus seems to have a bigger, a more global, a bigger understanding and a bigger mission than just you, which it is. It is us being alive, awake, and free. But, you know, the line in the Lord's Prayer, you know, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, your kingdom come. What in the world does that mean when you say that? And what does it mean for people in 2013 in Bloomington, Indiana? So the next number of weeks, we'll be talking about the kingdom of God. And I want to just go through some passages. Go to the next slide here. The kingdom of God is a phrase that it's all over the Gospels. It's kind of like one of those things you don't notice. It's kind of like you don't notice other cars, then you buy your car, and you notice that car everywhere. Right? It's kind of like the kingdom of God. When you highlight that, like kingdom of God, you start doing searches through the Gospel of Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. All over the place. Actually, the Gospel of Matthew is called the Kingdom of Heaven, and Matthew has a reason why he called it that. But it's the same concept. All over the place. Kingdom of God, Kingdom of God, Kingdom of God, Kingdom of God. And it's associated with what Jesus believed his mission to be. So I'm going to just go through this. I'm just going to look over 35 times in the Gospel of Luke alone this phrase occurs. So I'm just going to scan through a few of them, 7 or 8 of them. Then we're going to talk about what in the world does that mean for people like us, and how are we part of that mission, all right? Luke chapter 4, when people were coming to Jesus and they were looking for him, he was actually off by himself, and they were like, Jesus, we couldn't find you. He says, you know what? I must preach the good news of the kingdom of God in other towns too, because that is why I was sent. All right, next one. Soon afterwards, Jesus began a tour of the nearby towns and villages, preaching and announcing the good news about the kingdom of God. All right, next one. This is when he sent the 12 out on their first mission. He said, then he sent them out to tell everyone about the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. All right, next one. But the crowds found out where Jesus was going and they followed him. He welcomed them and he taught them about the kingdom of God. And he healed those who were sick. Next one. This is Jesus when he sends out a larger group of people. Sends a larger group. That's his name. Heal the sick and tell them the kingdom of God is near you now. All right, now stop here for a second. It's kind of like if we were the disciples and I was like, hey, Dan, you going to teach today? Yeah, what's he going to teach on? What do you think? There's one sermon. It's the kingdom of God. That's it. That's what Jesus over and over and over teaches about. Keep going. Until John the Baptist, Jesus taught me. Until John the Baptist, the law, most of the message of the prophets were your guides. But now the good news of the kingdom of God is preached, and everyone is eager to get in. Now stop here just for a second. Typically, if you grew up in a church, which some of you did, some of you didn't, if you have a church background, typically when you read the kingdom of God, we mentally transpose into its place heaven. Right? putting yourself in submission to the kingdom. All right? And there was even a prayer that Jesus would have prayed. It's called the Greek, it's called the Kaddish prayer. And Jesus would have prayed this. Here's a line that every Jewish man, woman, boy, and girl would have prayed over and over and over every time they went to church. Right? Every time. The prayer starts out this way. Glorified and sanctified be God's great name throughout the world, which he has created according to his will. This is the next line. May he establish his kingdom in your lifetime and during your days. And within the life of the entire house of Israel, speedily and soon. May he establish his kingdom in your lifetime. So, from little kids who first learned how to talk and understand and recite this liturgy over and over, may he establish his kingdom in your lifetime. May he establish kingdom in your lifetime. No. But the reality was, in Israel in those days, the kingdom of God, and they understood that to mean the way the world should work if God was king. They would think back to the time when David was king, when Israel prospered and life was good. There was peace, there was joy, there was good relationships. Right? That's what they understood the kingdom to be. But yet, what's the reality? Well, they got occupied by
kings are to be obeyed. Kings issue decrees, and they are to be obeyed. Wondering, just wondering, how many of us treat Jesus like he's a really good head coach, or he's the governor of my life, or he's the leader of the group I'm in? But we don't always see him as the king, because if he's the king, obedience is not optional. Right? Like I said, nobody says, well, I have to obey what the president says. We don't use that language about worldly, these kind of rulers. And I'm going to challenge you, there are some of you who Jesus has been asking you to do things, and you're kind of taking it or leaving it because Jesus is either your counselor, he's your coach, he's your mayor, your governor, but he's not your king. Because if he's your king, you are obliged to obey what he's asking you to do. And you're obliged to give the obedience of this is a statement of honor. So some of you have stopped, and the reason I'm saying that is because there's times where I think we have this longing for what life could be, and we don't connect the fact that our obedience is like two twins connected at the hip with understanding our longing. And we stop obeying because the longing is not happening, so we don't obey, so we don't long, we don't obey, we don't long. I'm saying do both. Still imagine what life could be for you, what Jesus has for you, your marriage, your family, your life, your personal satisfaction. But the only way to get there is to obey the king. And that's the reason people walked away from Jesus, was he started talking like a king, where obedience was no longer optional to what he said. Full